right? And then all, so this is a characteristic p-top. So most of the schemes, if not all, are over the base field K, and K has characteristic P, and it's algebraically closed. Now, section one, so the problem. Okay. So, first is I'd like to explain before stating the problem what the most important symmetries for Schnur variety. And what's that? So first, only look at this one example, that this is the moduli space principally polarized abelian varieties of dimension G. And then, let's see. So the main feature of that, so I picked an L, not equal to P. And then the main feature of this is that, at least for the symmetries concerned, is that there is a covering, an atop covering, and the group is the symplectic group valued in ZL. And the Hecker symmetries comes from a group action by a much bigger group on it, so on the cover, and it induces that algebraic correspondences on the moduli space. This is Hecker, and the name is the Hecker correspondences. Okay. Now, yeah. So, one of the basic questions that we would like to address here is an analog of the Erlangen program, in the sense that we'd like to ask, what is the algebraic geometric structure that's determined by the Hecker symmetry? And I'll do a very restricted version of that. So I take any x, let's say, for the sake of argument, sorry, a closed point. And then we'll define for the L power Hecker orbits, L power Hecker orbit of x. So it's just you take a point here, lift it upstairs, hit it by all possible symmetries, and project down. So this is a countable success. So this is a countable subset contained in a G. And the question that we would like to ask is, what is its algebraic closure? Oh, sorry, what is its Zariki closure? So before I go that, so I have analogs for non-P or L not equal to P. So instead of taking just the L power Hecker correspondences, we can take all the prime to P Hecker correspondences and ask a similar question. Now, there is a conjectural answer to the question of what the Zariki closure of the Hecker orbit is. So before stating the conjecture, I'd like to sort of describe the conjectural part of the conjectural answer. So this is the foliation structure. And this is first introduced by Ort. And also, I think, Vasya also discussed that, but I'm not sure about, I don't want to get into the priority question. So what is this? It's basically the idea is, fix an isomorphism type of an abelian variety with polar, principal polarization. But then you look at what happens when you sort of pass to the p-divisible group. So this is the geometric isomorphism type. And the related definitions are as follows. So take, let's see, of X. So is the basically the locus of locus in the moduli space of all points, or namely all the abelian varieties, with a given isomorphism type of Bersani-Tay group together with polarization. So this is for all K contained in K. So algebraically closed. So what's that? That's the space of Y in a G K such that a Y P infinity lambda Y infinity is isomorphic to the given one. Okay. It's not clear a priori that this is even algebraic or has any algebraic sense, but in fact it does. Let me state a few sort of algebraic properties. Due to these people. So one of them is it's smooth. It's actually a smooth subvariety, smooth locally closed in AG. So it actually has an underlying algebraic structure. That's the first thing. And also, by the way, I should call them these leaves. So that's the leaf. Lead passing through the point X. Okay. So each lead is smooth and locally closed. And let's see, what's the second one? The second one is visibly, so clearly, so each lead is stable under the Hecker symmetry. Because we're fixing an isomorphism type of the p-divisible group and L is prime to p. Okay? And we have a formula. We have a formula for the dimension. Well, let me just write it down. The formula is AX, the abelian variety X, has slopes lambda 1 to lambda n. And then multiplicity HI, I from 1 to n, then the dimension of the leaf is half summation lambda j minus lambda I times HI plus j. Lambda I less than lambda j, and lambda I plus lambda j not equal to 1 plus 1 half summation lambda j minus lambda I times hi times hi plus 1 over 2, and this is over lambda I lambda j, but lambda I plus lambda j equals. So if you like, that's the formula. Okay. Now, we can state the conjectural answer to the question we first posed. So that's the Hecker orbit conjecture. And what it says is that for each L, the L power Hecker orbit is dense in the leaf passing through it. Okay, it's a conjectural clean answer. Okay, and there are a couple of cases known. For instance, it's known, the known cases So if x, the x is ordinary, and this is known before the conjecture is formulated, and then plus others, some others. And before going on for stating the results about this conjecture, I'll separate this conjecture into two parts. There's one part I'll say it's a continuous version. And the other part is, I'll say that it's the discrete version. Okay. The continuous version says that the closure, so it's a statement about dimension. So the closure, we take the L-Powell-Hackett orbit, you close that up, and it, well, in the sense of taking the Dirichlet closure, and the statement is that it contains the connected component passing through X. And the discrete version is that, well, you can look at the set of connected components of the lead passing through X, and the statement is that Hecker L, so Hecker, so operates transitively on the set of connected components. Okay. And clearly that the whole version is equivalent to the combination of the two. Okay. And the variations. So one is the trivial variation is so all L not equal to P, instead of just fixing one prime L not equal to P, and also we can use it for all these other Shimura varieties. Before stating the known results, well, the results so far, I'd like to make a remark about the discrete case. So the remark I'd like to make is that the discrete version for X not equals, which is not supersingular. By the way, supersingular means that all the slopes are 1/2, or in other words, it's defined over a finite field, and the Frobenius, some power of the Frobenius, is a scalar. Okay. And this actually turns out to be equivalent to that, the statement that the lead is irreducible or connected. And this is, I labeled it, so the scheme is that I'll have ABCs, ABCs for method used, and then the results about the conjecture will be labeled as 1 and 2. So the theorem says that let Z be a smooth, so locally closed, subscheme of AG, you take any smooth one and impose one condition, well, two conditions actually, which is stable under Hecker, either 1L, let's say Hecker L power Hecker, and then such that hacker, the L-power hacker can operate sensitively on Z. So it's in some sense more or less look like one orbit. Okay. And then assume that the generic point or the maximal point, each maximal point of Z is not super single. So we know that every maximal point of Z is not super singular. That has to be ruled out. Then two things happen. Then, so one is that the L-odic monodromy for the abelian variety, the universal abelian variety restricted to Z, meaning that you take it, the action on H1 is as big as you want, as you think. The maximal possible. Two. So Z is irreducible. And the equivalence, so this remark came from the statement two. In this case, it means that you have two irreducible components, and the statement is that there is one Hecker correspondence mapping one to the other. It's transitive. It permutes the components around. But actually, it turns out that the assumption is stupid, that there is only one component. Components. Oh, I'm sorry. Pi in order. Sorry. Yeah, so what's known about this conjecture? Statement of results. Partial result. Okay. Now, in some sense, let me first state the theorem one is that in some sense one can reduce by methods known, so one can almost prove this conjecture modulo a discrete problem. So I'll say that you can reduce, if you look at the discrete problem, but right now, instead of looking at the Ziegler case, you look at the Hilbert modular case. Okay. And look at it through a family of discrete problems. And that implies the Hecker orbit problem. So the conjecture for the Ziegler case. And so for the continual version. Okay. So basically this is a reduction to sort of a manageable problem. And then theorem two, and we will hear more about that this afternoon from Chafu's talk. It says for what we know, what one knows so far, about the discrete problem for the Hilbert case. One is that if we look at a continuous version, it's true. Oh, by the way, I should say that for the Hilbert version, so what I mean is the moduli space, the Hilbert moduli variety defined by the linear and Pappus. And now it's true. What about the discrete version? So this is sort of the ingredient that one hasn't proved at this point. It's known to hold for is either the totally real field F, so every Hilbert modular variety is defined by some totally real field is unramified at P, or is totally ramified. Okay, and plus others. So in some sense, we know quite a lot, and so it's just the general case that has not been hammered out so far. I mean, the hope, of course, is that this is a manageable problem, that although there are ramification problems and so on, but at some point, hopefully, in the near future, we'll get that. Like to begin to describe the tools. That's three? Thank you. In my notes, I actually had three. Yes. So there are tools. So first, the local rigidity result. Okay. Let me first state the general case. So the theorem for the setup is as follows. We take a smooth P divisible formal group. So a P divisible formal group. So over K off. And then, so what do we have from such a thing? We can look at this anomorphism, right? And then we can tensor it over Q. And looking at its unit group, and look at the algebraic group attached to the group of all units. We have such a thing. So this is a p-adic group, a group over Q. So a group over Q-P. Okay. So now I suppose that I have a linear algebraic group, G over Q-P. And then I assume that I have a representation of G to this group above, and I'll assume that this representation is not really sort of trivial in the sense that it doesn't have trivial components. Such that, so one, the row has no non-trivial trivial subquotient. So in the sense that if you take its representation on the isocrystal, there is no trivial subquotient. And now we assume, so the theorem, guess it's B now. So suppose that Z be a smooth, be an irreducible closed formal subscheme of X. Okay. I don't require much more, such that. I do require that it has something to do with the representation, such that there exists an open subgroup U contained in the QP points of G. Pretty small, but open, especially it's not trivial, such that Z is stable under the image of U under rho. So I'm here tacitly assuming that rho of U is contained in the endomorphism ring of X. What's the conclusion? The conclusion is that Z is a p-divisible group. Okay. So as an illustration, so for those of you who feel bored anytime in the talk, here is an exercise. The exercise is to specialize this to a very, very simple situation. So exercise. So specializing it to the case of a torus. So T, the formal torus, over K, and Z, contained in T, so it's irreducible, as before, and then stable, the stable under one automorphism, Pn. So multiplication by 1 plus P to the n on the torus, n, let's say, bigger than or equal to 2, something, 1. And then the conclusion is that this is a form of the torus. Somehow, so this condition of subvariety, formal subvariety, being stable under sort of some non-trivial action, so it really forces, so it forces this variety to be so very, very special. You can't get anything sort of that's not obvious. What's the numbering? I guess it's 4 now. So this is the last of the methods that I would like to explain used to prove the main result. And that's sort of canonical coordinates. I labeled it as canonical coordinates. This is actually in a very special, very specific sense, it really generalizes the Sierre-Tate canonical coordinates. So just recall for you orally that I guess in 1964, maybe a year before that, in the Wu-Tou conference or summer school on algebraic geometry, Sierre-Tate introduced canonical coordinates on the ordinary locus of the modular curve, completed at a point. Now, what I'll be explaining in this section is a generalization of this so that we have, sort of, in some sense, canonical coordinates, but not for an open subset of the moduli space, but rather for completion on the leaf. Formal completion. Of the leaf. So let's see, what is it? Okay. So the starting point of this business is the following, is sort of applying a result of Tink. It's not what it says, but has lots of applications. Among one of them is that if we restrict, or so we start with we take the universal abelian variety and restrict it to, let's say, to a leaf. And then it takes its p-divisible group, or Bastardi-Tate group attached to it, and what Tink tells us is that it has a filtration. Okay. So, oh, maybe, so I'll assume, sorry. So before I do that, assume that we are in a special case where we look at the Borsati K group that we started with, and we assume that it decomposes into a direct sum of isoclinic part. So each BN, BI is isoclinic of slope lambda I and height HI. Okay. And then so what Ting says that it has a canonical filtration. Expanding the obvious one here such that the associated graded, if you look at the associated graded of the canonical filtration, it's canonically isomorphic to the constant BI. Maybe I should say I. So this is constant. Let me put it next here. So I've completed X. Oh, yes, thank you. This is actually important. Lambda 1. It's not important now, but it's important later. So let me fix it now. Yes, the slopes are Frobenius slopes, measuring divisibility properties. No, it's assumed. It's assumed. So what? So one of the things one will get from just looking at what Ting says is that if you want to understand the local coordinates or the formal completion of a leaf, so basically we are looking at multiple extensions of these guys' BI. So morally, so see. X. If we look at the formal completion at point X, so it comes from multiple extensions of B1, B. So, in the obvious sense. Okay, you basically want to build up your P divisible group from the given ones, and so in some sense, so loosely speaking, the deformation coordinates are so measures such extension. Okay. Now so we have C of X, and let's sort of analyze this. So it's contained, the formal completion of a leaf is contained in the deformation space of the Borsati K group. That's clear. And inside here, we have multiple extensions of these guys. And because we actually have polarization when we considered Abelian sort of moduli spaces, so there are self-dual ones, multiple extensions. And, but in any case, it's sort of clear from sort of analyzing multiple extensions. So the building blocks are, so you look at extension of one by another. And the question is, well, which part is the essential one? So what's what is this business of sort of building up the whole thing from through the building blocks. So what one has is, you have maps. We have maps, so indexed. So let's say D. So we have maps and spaces indexed by subintervals. Of 1m, ab are supposed to be integers. Okay, and on the top, the longest one is what we want, and we'd like to explain a little bit about such structure. And the structure is that we have lots of maps. What are these? I have multiple extensions, but I'd like, so just look at a part of the extension, throwing away, for instance, if I start with the whole extension, I can lop off the first one or the last one. So I get a multiple extension of length one less, and so on. So that gives us lots of maps. And so here, for instance, we have maps like this. And it also maps to B of A minus plus 1, B minus 1. And what can we say about these maps? In some sense, these maps are pretty rigid. So one is that any arrow, so these two, maybe I should try to try color chalk. These two arrows, and all these arrows that you directly see, they are relative groups. Although at this point I haven't told you what the fiber groups are. Each one is a family of groups. So they have, and moreover, now if we look at a part like this, then of course, by definition, we have a map from the top to the fiber product of the two arrows down. And the statement is that this is a biextension. Again, I haven't said what these groups are, but so these biextensions, what turns out is that they're all groups and can be explicitly described. Okay. So it's in this sense that one can say that this business of understanding or analyzing the formal completion of a leaf is a true generalization of the Sirtay local coordinate. In the Sirtay case, there's only one step, so to speak. There's only one extension, so that one just gets one group. Okay. No. Okay. Oh, so building blocks. So let me say a few words about the groups that it's here, but I didn't say what they are. Okay. So the key case. It's just we look at extension of one of the BIs by another. So I'll look at the extension part of extension of BI by BJ. Okay. So this is a contained in the deformation space of BI cross BJ. Here, I guess, so lambda I is less than lambda j, so that the slope is aligned correctly. Okay. So as we said, but this is contained in this is the extension part of the deformation. Okay. Being the extension, part, therefore, when one has, there is a canonical group structure by the Barisan that has a group structure. It's a smooth formal group. Okay. Now, so basically, so that we are saying that suppose we just have two slopes. Suppose the abelian variety has just two slopes. So we know that, let's try to examine the formal completion of the leaf passing through that point. And we know that, well, the formal completion is contained in a smooth formal group. But in general, so is it everything? I mean, is the formal completion just everything? Or is it smaller? And the answer is, it's not whole thing. But on the other hand, you can explicitly describe it. Okay. So the answer is that in this case, the right answer, the answer to the leaf part is the maximal P divisible formal subgroup. So let me actually state it. So as a theorem, I guess that's now C, so that's 1. So 2 is, so denoted P divisible, the maximal P divisible formal subgroup, so I give it a name, BIBJ, and P divisible. And then, so let's ask, what can we say about this? So it's a P divisible group, so it has so basic numerical invariance. So for instance, what is its slope? What are the slopes? So it, the answer is that it has only one slope. And what's its actual slope? It's the difference of the two. Okay. And what is the height? And its height is, it's the product of the height of the two. Is that if you take, so one can do something a little better and say, oh, huh, we know, so I mean, there are lots of these things with the given slope and given height. Can we say anything canonical? So the statement is, yes, we can. We can specify it canonically, but up to isogeny. So the statement is that if you take the Dieudonné module, Cartier-Dieudonné module, attached to this group, well, either this or that, that's the same thing. So there is a canonical arrow. And mapping to, so it's a very naive one. If you have two Dieudonné modules, or Cartier modules, or M of BI, M of BJ, each is a free sort of module over the bit vectors of finite rank. And then there are sort of well-known ways of attaching to this linear algebra construction an isocrystal. And the statement is that this is an isomorphism. So in some sense, I'm not asserting, so that I know so anyone so far at this point knows what the canonical integral structure is. So there is a problem about the integral lattice left, but one can construct such a map. Okay. So maybe as a remark, so what is this? One can ask, if you just want to compute the extension part, the Cartesian module of this, anyone wants to do any explicit calculation of this, how does one do it? The answer is that you can do it by sort of linear algebra. So you take the Cartesian module, you take the extension function of, and let's see, I think it's this. Now here, what you put in is MJ. And there's something else that you put here, where and what's this unknown, the undefined gadget BC? So what you do is you take the first, take the formal curves in the Cartier ring. So that's the kernel of, so this is the set of all formal curves in the Cartier, reduced Cartier functor, and you take the typical elements, curves in it. And how does this make sense? The Cartier ring, when that's a ring, has a ring structure. So it has a canonical structure as a bimodule on both sides of this thing, multiplication by the Cartier ring with values in P. But on the other hand, so it is the set of all P typical curves, and therefore there is an extra copy of the Cartier ring operations commuting with a given bimodule structure. And here, so here one uses one of the two bimodule structure in the tensor ring product. Here, in taking the first extension functor, one uses the other one, but there is an extra copy left commuting with the two other structures, and that gives the Cartier module. Okay, so now I have 10 minutes. And so in the about 10 minutes left, I would like to explain sort of in a very special case how one proves the main result. So that is, suppose one assumes that the Hecker orbit conjecture for the Hilbert case, discrete version, it's only a discrete version, is known. So suppose we have that extra piece of discrete information. Then one can do most of the legal case. Okay. Five sketch of special case proof in a special case. Very special case. So let's try to think about what the problem is. So the special case is that suppose we assume that there are only two slopes involved. And I assume that it's even a product. So each line is isoclinic. So lambda slope are different. That's somehow, this is the most important case. So what I'm not saying, sort of explaining here, is that if you if one knows how to do this, one can then do the general case. By basically, by I say there are lots of building blocks and so on. So we start with the point x in the moduli space. We sort of move the point around by Hecker symmetries, and we want to show that the Zariski closure of it is big. Now generally, this is, generally how to really do this problem without a trick. The trick is to use the Hilbert moduli variety. In other words, I don't know a Hilbert-free proof of any case of significance at this point, although I would like to. So the idea is first, may assume the X, this variety, this abelian variety, is defined over a finite field, some SQ. Okay. And then it becomes, right, once one has this, then, so one can apply this local rigidity result, because one knows that sort of this C of X, or it's a general fact that this is stable under, so I'd say loosely speaking, under the action of an open subgroup of the following unitary group. You take the anomorphism of AX infinity, and then together with an involution sort of attached but sort of coming from the polarization, you take the unitary group of that, and sort of for general reasons, basically, so these are the local stabilizer subgroups, and you have an orbit, it's stable under the action of the local stabilizer subgroup. And so one says, aha, this is very good by the local rigidity theorem that was in section N, whose value I cannot recall, it's either 2 or 3, rigidity. So what one finds is that Cx of X is a p-divisible subgroup. In this case, where I even have this. So it doesn't have a whole lot of possibilities. It's some p-divisible subgroup. The problem is, the question is, we want to show that it has the correct dimension. And so the general argument basically tells us nothing. So one knows this, one knows that this subgroup is not trivial, but one doesn't know very much beyond these two. One knows a little bit more. Not that much more. Okay. So now, so Hilbert trick. So the trick meaning that so hopefully one day one can eliminate the trick. But Hilbert trick comes as follows. So this is, we have an abelian variety defined over a finite field, therefore, so it has complex multiplication. So its anomorphism ring contains, otherwise it may be a product in general, but let's assume that it contains a totally real field of maximal dimension. So what that gives us is that if F is the name of that totally real field, and then we get a map which is very close to being a tall, if one does it right, an a tall map to the zero case. So this is coming from the passing through X. Now inside here, one has sort of the Hecker orbit, but with attached to F inside here. And it maps. So here, we have the Hecker orbit here, and this map being compatible with the symmetries, so the Hecker orbit here maps to here. So that the Earth's enclosure of the Hecker orbit maps to the Earth's enclosure of the Hecker orbit on the other hand. So basically what happens is that if I know that the Earth's enclosure of the Hecker orbit on the left hand side here is big, then we know something. Then, so assuming the orbit conjecture for the Hilbert case, now assuming this, what this tells us, what we know here, so in general we know already that the Hilbert, the Hecker orbit conjecture, so somehow we know almost know it, we know that it has the right dimension. We just don't know whether there's a component problem. So ignoring the component problem, then the whole leaf here, so the leaf of X is, so to speak, contained in the Earth enclosure of the Hecker orbit. I guess this is right. So this means that the leaf in the Hilbert, leaf in here, it maps the leaf here. We are assuming that, we are assuming the Hecker orbit conjecture for Hilbert case is valid. So we got lots of points in the Earth enclosure of the Hecker orbit here. That's somewhere we want information about. Now the point is that there exists a very symmetric point. So in a sense that its anamorphism ring is the one sort of maximally allowed under the given slope condition. Okay. So I have large anamorphism. And it has, having sort of large anamorphism ring, what does it do? It means that this group is quite large. And a linear algebra calculation tells us what the representation of this group on the crystal attached to this p-divisible group is. One understands that completely. It's essentially, so when one passes to the algebraic closure, it's the second symmetric product of the standard representation of a GLM. In particular, it's irreducible. So the action of a local automorphism group on the isocrystal of B1, B2, visible, is irreducible. And that's very good because, I mean, we know that it's not trivial. It's being irreducible. Then it's the whole thing. Okay. That's the end of it. The proof of this case, and I'll finish the sketch. Thank you, Alex. I think I finished on time.